Hello, everybody. This is not the Mac Show. As you know, the Mac Show is not on this week. Ewan is off enjoying the holidays in the sun and all sorts of other awesome stuff. We thought, just as a little bit of a change and maybe to let you experience new things, let you find out new things that are happening around the network, we'd throw the Pocket Show into the stream, into the Mac stream this week. I hope you like it. Please don't feel you have to listen to it. Please feel free to skip over if you feel that you have listened to the Pocket Show, it's not for you and you aren't really all that interested and you feel that we're being very rude and unacceptable by throwing this into your stream. And that's completely fine. I completely understand that. If not, and you want to have a listen, please feel free to do so. And subscribe if you like it. I'd really appreciate it. If you don't feel like it, or you like it, or you don't like it, or whatever, please give us some feedback. Either way, I'd really appreciate it. So here it is. This is the Pocket Show this week. I hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
And welcome to the Pocket Show on the British Tech Network. I am here with a fantastic panel to discuss all things mobile device and pocket size technology and such and such. I have a panel that I've had to kind of assemble at least 50% of it in a bit of a rush, which I really appreciate, but we'll come to that in a second. So first of all, I'm just going to start with Alan Houshall. How are you this evening, Alan?
I'm good, thanks. Good. Been a good bank holiday weekend.
Yes, were you off on Friday as well, or do you just do the Monday?
No, just the Monday.
Right, okay. My office was closed on the Friday, but because I'm a contractor, I went in on Friday because I don't get paid otherwise. So I was pretty much the only person in the building.
Which can be nice.
Yeah, it was nice, apart from the fact the canteen was closed, so I had to phone in Domino's. So, you know, it was a pain, these things you have to bear. But yeah, have you had much sun this weekend? English bank holiday?
Done pretty well. Good. Yeah, no, it's been good.
Mm. Very good. And next to him, a new man on the network is Eric. Sorry, Eric. You know, before the show, I asked Eric how to pronounce his last name, and I just screwed up his first name. So, it's Eric Gardini, how are you this evening, Eric?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. And here it's been sunny. It's been graduation time. Today's actually a national holiday in the United States for Memorial Day.
Yeah.
So most of us had the day off. Mm-hmm. It's been a very good weekend.
Very good. So was there kind of celebrations and things like that you went along to or nothing like that? Or is it just,
we had three graduation parties yesterday.
Right.
Typically we would go camping over this weekend, but there was just too much stuff going on.
Right. Okay. Okay. Very good. And also we have Kelly Want from the Mac Observer. How are you?
Yes, indeed. Yes. I'm well. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. We also have Doc Rock here as well from Tua, the unofficial Apple weblog. Thank you for joining us, Doc.
Thank you so much, too. And I would be doing holiday festivities, too, but it just started, so I got time.
Yes, first thing in the morning for you. And I would imagine, given your Twitter feed over the weekend, you're probably fairly hungover, too. No?
Of course.
Yes. But, a
good barbecue. A good barbecue will settle that out. So, you know, I got steaks marinating. I'm ready.
Very good. And I just want to say thank you very much to both Kelly and Doug, because they've jumped in at the very last minute. It was sort of let down in the 11th hour by our iOS panelist. And I sent out a panic tweet to these guys, and they both jumped on with about 10 minutes notice. So I really appreciate it, guys. And I should also make a mention to Adam Christensen as well, who also answered the call, the bat signal that went up for the Pocket Show. But he was just a little bit late to the show, and I felt it was going to be slightly one-sided if we have three iOS panelists on the show. So. Which is good with the two.
But thank you, Adam, all the same.
Yes, really appreciate Adam. And I really appreciate Kelly and Doc. And of course, Eric and Alan for coming along tonight. So we will start. First of all, I just want to talk about Windows Phone 9, very, very quickly. Oh, no, we weren't going to talk about that. Sorry, Microsoft Surface 3. This is going well. Microsoft Surface
3. We'll talk about it very quickly. We're not going to talk about it. Next.
Yeah, I know. I have a separate set of show notes that I kind of keep my own personal notes in, and I'd started to show Windows Phone 9, so we'll skip over that. I might edit this section. Microsoft Surface Pro 3. So they've announced this last week, this is kind of it kind of feels like it's the Surface that they've always wanted to do. So it kind of feels like the Surface that they wanted the first Surface to be. Thinner, lighter, faster, cheaper, better audio, better keyboard. It's very much more of a tablet hybrid than the previous ones. And also the pen looks really interesting as well. It's getting some really good reviews. Alan, have you had a chance to have a look at one of these, or what's your thoughts on them?
Not in the flesh. I mean, you've got to say Microsoft does like sort of keeping things consistent. And isn't it always the third version Microsoft product you're supposed to actually buy? So Surface 3. but yeah, I think they've finally sort of, a lot of things have sort of come together for this one. Obviously, the screen size change because, a 12 inch sort of sitting there so that you can actually call it a sort of reasonably serious laptop replacement.
So the previous one was 10 inches.
The weight loss. Yeah, all the previous Surfaces have been 10 inch, both the pros and the non pros. And, you know, also with the other big one screen wise is obviously the change from 16:9 to 3:2 aspect ratio.
Right, okay.
So, it's not as weird if you try and use it portrait, which was a fair criticism of trying to use a 16:9 device in portrait is weird. The big one is, and they've done, the further improvements with the kickstand. Now,
it's got two multiple angles.
No, no, it's got almost. It's a friction hinge, so you can put it at any position.
Really? Oh, I didn't appreciate that. Right? Okay.
No, it's the previous generation had the two positions instead of one.
Okay. This one has all
the positions.
Yeah, all the positions.
Kama Sutra of Surface tablets.
The keyboard's been further enhanced with things like the fact that it still attaches with the same magnetic physical coupling underneath that can come away, but then you can also sort of lap up the initial bit of it to magnetize to the lower bit of the screen, which gives you actually a tilted keyboard. So you've got a more traditional... Yeah. And that apparently also, because it's no longer attached by a smaller central magnet in the middle, actually also makes it more rigid because it's got a magnet bar across the whole bottom width of the screen. Mm. That's also the reason they had to move the start button to the right-hand side instead of bottom center.
Oh, because of the magnets and things. It's also dropped in price as well, considering it's all these positive things that you're talking about there. And it's $100 cheaper US, and I'm going to try and do that math really quickly there. It's about 80 quid cheaper in the UK, which is interesting. Eric, you said that you had a Surface. Was that Surface 1, did you say?
Yeah, I had the Surface 1. Yeah. And I watched the link, you guys gave us a link to a video of David Pogue doing kind of like a spoof on the Apple versus Mac, showing an Apple iPad compared to this new Surface. Mm-hmm. And I'm really impressed. And it actually makes me want to go out and purchase a Surface after watching that. So I don't know if he was just trying to be funny, but he was very informational. And another thing you did, I don't know if you mentioned that about the keyboard. It sounds like it lights up now as well. It's like
backlit. Yeah, no, it's backlit.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And that's a big selling point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They've increased the size of the touchpad, and they reckon it might actually be one of the best touchpads on Windows. Now, I know, obviously, Mac, I think, still has the edge in that people tend to find Mac touchpads slightly better, but I think they've also hit the touchpad out the ballpark, which, considering this is a click-on mobile device, that's pretty impressive too, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think having a tablet that you can have a touchpad at the bottom of your keyboard, where you see a lot of Bluetooth keyboards where, you know, sure, it'll snap over the top of your iPad and be a protective cover, but then you don't get the scrolling and the touchpad part without reaching up again for the screen if you want to do some actual work sometimes.
Yeah, it's a really weird one, but one of the key sort of differentiators has always been, you know, Windows, whether full Windows or RT, knows about and actually has the full concept of a mouse cursor, which, you know, iPad, it emulates a finger, but it doesn't actually have the idea of cursor because it's always, it's not intending to have things like hover and right click and things, which obviously, you know, you've, people have emulated or come up with alternates. But yeah, I mean, UK official price for the Surface Pro 3 starts at £639, including VAT.
Yeah, and it's available for pre-order just now as well.
Yeah.
It's certainly interesting.
That's an amazing price, really, you think about it. I that's what I spent for the RT that I had, the first version, and it was nothing like this device at all. I mean, but it was a couple of years ago, I guess, now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fact that also, I mean, one of the other big things people were asking for before was choice. And now you can get it in these four or five versions, you know, from i3 up to i7 processor. And it's the smallest, lightest, thinnest thing you can get an i7 processor in, I believe, at the moment. Okay. And it's still reasonably priced, even heading up to the i7.
Yeah.
The really weird one is sort of... And I think I've seen a lot of reviews on the web having trouble working out, should they be comparing it with the iPad Air or should they be comparing it with the MacBook Air?
So they, they're comparing it with the MacBook Air more regularly, I think. And I think that makes sense because that's sort of what Microsoft's trying to say here. They're trying to say, look, here's a Windows version of the MacBook Air, but also it's a tablet.
Is the MacBook Air touchscreen though?
No, it's not. No.
No.
See, that's a big thing, I think.
Yeah. I can't. The amount of times that I do kind of absentmindedly kind of reach out and try and touch my screen when I'm sort of not really thinking about it. It's a laptop. I mean, Kelly, what do you think of this? Have you played with the Surface before? Is this appealing at all to you?
Well, I've played with the original Surface briefly, or the Surface 2, I mean, and it wasn't for me. I could see the use in it for a lot of people, but it wasn't something that I was particularly sold on. I thought it was the issue that I have at the moment with the way that they've set up the comparisons is that when they did the with the Surface 2, when they were going, it's an iPad Air, and you know, that's what they were comparing it to, or the iPad, you know, whatever iPad it was that they were comparing against, I kind of went, but it's not really a tablet. Like, they've taken a tablet and tried really hard to make it a laptop. And then with the 3, they've said, it's a laptop. And I'm like, but it's not quite a laptop either. Like, even when you compare it to other ones that are running Windows 8. So I have a friend that has an HP laptop that runs Windows 8, which has the touchscreen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a Chromebook style kind of a thing, but it's got the touchscreen on it and everything. And I've tried that. And it seems like for me, the hang up is not the hardware. It's that Windows 8 is, for me anyway, is kind of confusing. And I don't know if I'm supposed to be using the keyboard or supposed to be using the touchscreen. And it feels weird to touch the laptop screen and have it react. And so for me, it sort of feels like they should have just gone out on a limb and turned this into some sort of third device category. Like, it's not a laptop, it's not a tablet, it's a third thing. And this would have been a really great way to differentiate themselves from all the rest of those, because by the time you start tricking it out with the keyboard and the other stuff, like, you end up spending more on a Surface than you would on a MacBook Air. And I think part of the reason that you look at the comparisons and see a 13-inch MacBook Air, not an 11, is because the price is still a thing that Microsoft hasn't nailed down yet. It's not a commodity.
Yeah, because this keyboard that we were talking about before, that's still extra. That's still $129. It's £109.99 over and above that. So even with the base model, that takes you above the price of an 11-inch MacBook Air.
And that's an excessively crazy price for any kind of a keyboard, whether it lights up or not. And the old ones that didn't light up, they were charging that same amount too. Yeah. One question I don't know if you guys might have the answer to, and Kelly, I absolutely agree with you. Windows 8 right off the bat is very hard to figure out and learn. But my daughter, she's had an Asus touchscreen Windows 8 laptop for a year now. I got it for her for her graduation. And she has she reports back of trying to touch her screen at school on the other computers now, hoping that it would react the same way.
Yeah, I think it's a funny generation thing. Because I mean, my kids who are not graduation age, they're younger than that, and they just expect everything to be touchscreen. You know, it doesn't even occur to them that it won't be touchscreen. And it's like,
how much time do they spend on machines that aren't touchscreen machines? You know, a lot of the reason that people feel like they can touch all the other screens is because they spend all their time on a phone.
Yeah. That's
you know. If I spend all my time on my iPhone and my iPad, and then I spend half an hour in front of my computer, yeah, I'd probably touch the screen a lot more. But I think I also have a lot of muscle memory involved with the hinge and the keyboard. And once those are attached, I know I don't touch the screen.
Yeah,
I don't know. It could be a thing like that. But
yeah, okay, she doesn't have a smartphone. One thing I was wondering, I forgot to ask this. Now, when you get a Surface Pro 3 with an i7, this is just my own curiosity. Is there a fan in that at all? Do you got to add a fan now to your tablet?
All of the Pro 3 devices do have a fan in there. They've got the perimeter venting. Apparently, heat and fan noise is there is more when you've got an i7 in. There is more heat than comes off. For example, an iPad Air, of course. But apparently, it's very quiet when the fan kicks in, and it's not all the time.
I think that would be a turnoff for some people, though. I mean, if you're sitting in your, I know I've used a Nexus 7. I've had a couple of Asus tablets, and the lack of a fan is a big plus. It makes you really feel more cozy with it than thinking it may possibly overheat on you, you know?
That is a thing I like about my Nexus 7, but also I wonder, because I've used my iPad extensively, both my 3 and my Air, and had them get warm, not hot, but warm. And so if they know that the Surface is going to get warm enough to warrant having a fan built in, it makes me wonder how hot it will get before that kicks on and how comfortable that would be to hold.
They've had some people doing, you know, sort of stress testing them and stuff. And they've said, you know, warm, but never uncomfortable to touch.
Okay.
I haven't had direct can't say firsthand,
but,
the other bit that you touched on briefly, Paul, was obviously, and Microsoft's supposedly doing a bit of a differentiator, is Pen.
I was going to talk about that. Thanks you mentioned that. It's again some really good reviews. So it's a capacitive pen, isn't it?
No, it's a full active digitizer, so it's not a capacitive. Yeah. So it's not a iPad style sausage finger thing. Yeah, it is a proper digitizer pen.
Sure, it's got a tiny, tiny little nib on it as well. And that's what's always kind of put me off pens. I've tried to use pens on the iPad and things like that, but it's that nib at the end is really, really difficult to do any kind of detailed work.
Yeah,
even just the sketching notes.
The nib does flex a bit, and then can do 256 levels of pressure. So you can actually do, brush work with it, as well as just very thin, accurate lines. And they've done a lot of work, apparently, getting the latency really down, whereas that's obviously another problem. Often you draw with a pen and, you know, there's a line that starts following with an obvious gap to where your pen was catching up. And they've also shrunk the layers, so again, where you touch on the screen is where the line appears.
Right. Okay. It'd be interesting to see. So Paul Kirkle appears in the network on occasion. Hasn't actually been in for a while, but he's an iPad artist. But he also tries out different tablets and things like that. So he tries Nexus tablets, BlackBerry tablets, whatever. This would be quite interesting, I think, to see what he could produce with this if it's got that kind of level of detail.
Yeah, he's done some fun stuff just with the Huddle.
Yes, I've seen some of that stuff. And even them, that's a capacitive pen that he's using there. So if he could use something that's got more detail and more layers and things like that, maybe.
Yeah, in the Tycho from Penny Arcade gave it a reasonably favorable review. He really liked the pen on the previous Pro, and this one, yeah, he said is good. He's got a couple of comments that he's feeding back to Microsoft. But because it was a big change, the Surface Pro 2 actually used a Wacom digitizer pen.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Digitizing, mm-hmm. whereas this is a new technology. Okay. I'm not sure whether it's licensed or Microsoft's own in this new pen.
Oh, well, that will be interesting to see when some of these start getting out in the wild and we manage to get a hold of them. New version of Android is in the works. Now, there's no surprise there, but we've maybe got some more news. We mentioned the last show that it was Android Police had reported that they'd heard a rumor that OK Google was going to be prevalent throughout the device. Other things are now suggesting, again, released by Android Police, that the home button will be disappearing. We're also starting to see some rumors come out about getting a less cluttered new design with a lot of kind of nods to iOS 7, new icons similar to Google's online icons, and just a much flatter and cleaner design. I mean, obviously, we're going to hear more about this in Google I.O., but I mean, what's you guys' thoughts on this? This kind of whole Android kind of thinking, it kind of bringing its design a lot more flatter and less cluttered. Is that a good thing? I mean, Eric, you use, well, in fact, Kelly just surprised me by saying that you've got a Nexus 7 as well. So I think most of us
have
some kind of Android device kicking about. But Eric, what's your thoughts on this? Are you looking forward to this redesign, or are you a bit kind of skeptical in the way that iOS people were with the iOS 7 redesign?
Yeah, see, I get easily bored with any OS and UI changes. So I'm always looking forward to the next UI and the next version. I think you might get a little bit of a preview if you download the new Google Plus app. It's got like a red background. I really find it, you know, and a problem I always had with Google Plus, it was not obvious on how to make a post. And now it's got a permanent pencil right there. You just hit the button there. And on the left, nice. You hit another button to hit new posts, touch to see them. A little gray oval comes up instead of swiping down. They took it for granted that you knew to pull down to refresh your Google Plus feed. And now it's right in front of your face at all times. It's very nice. And I think this is kind of where they're going with the new, whatever new version they come with.
Mm. What do you think they're going to call this one? I know there's some rumors coming out, but do you think it's likely it'll be Lollipop or?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I was trying to think of an L, since they've already done the branding thing with a candy company. What type of thing they could go with their next way? You know, another, I don't know, like a Hershey's product or something. But I don't.
Lemon heads.
Right. You know what? I think go through my mind for a second. Yes, I think that would be better than Lollipop myself. That's a good one, Kelly.
I can't think of a UK sweetie that begins with an L at all. Because Kit Kat was. Did you have Kit Kats in the US? I thought it was a British thing.
Oh, yes.
I don't think Lion Bar is that in the US?
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome.
But you know, would that really piss off Apple's lawyers? Lion.
Yes.
Haven't they got cats patented?
Yeah, probably.
That would be funny though.
When you say that you thought that Kit Kat was a UK thing, now, do you have the annoying Kit Kat commercials that we used to have all the time where it was like, give me a break? And
oh, yeah, we got those too.
Oh, yeah, give me a break.
Do you guys?
Kit Kat, yeah.
Oh, certainly. The ones to check out is you can get crazy Kit Kat flavors from like Japan.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right, Doc?
Crap ton of them. I have tasted somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 flavors of Kit Kat.
Really?
Wow.
And one of the best ones ever produced was Kit Kat ginger ale flavor. Now the thing in Japan, you know, there's a bunch of prefectures, right? You're looking at like 47 prefectures, which is similar to our states. And so there's a terminology known as a meibutsu. And meibutsu is like the thing that's the most famous flavor from that town, so to speak, right? Right. So like Washington State would have apple flavored Kit Kat, mm-hmm. right? And Texas would have barbecue flavored Kit Kat or like armadillo flavored Kit Kat or something weird like that. And yeah, so now the thing is all of the flavors are matching the current locations. So it's kind of a thing when someone comes from that particular area, when they visit, they bring the flavor that matches their location. So I've tried all kinds of things. But yeah, the other ones, Hojicha, which is a smoked tea, also is a very, very delicious Kit Kat.
So
yeah. I've seen like dark chocolate and green tea, right, and
I got
white
that one right
chocolate
here on the desk.
And a variety of others. There's a couple of Japanese grocery stores here, and I like to walk down the candy aisle and guess. So
there's strawberry, there's like blue cheesecake or a blueberry cheesecake. Yeah, there's all kinds of great ones.
I've got the pomegranate, papaya, raspberry, coke and lemonade apparently are still the best.
Somebody, oh my goodness,
burrowing out of their desk just now.
Yeah, who's digging out?
that was me. I was going to send you a picture of this Kit Kat that I got right here.
All right, okay.
And wow, I've got to say, I've never heard of any other kind of Kit Kat. That must be a Midwest thing. We're sheltered from this greatness.
So you just have milk chocolate Kit Kat?
Yeah, chocolate.
Yeah, that's the most common.
Yeah.
Well, every once in a while, they'll put out a white or a dark. Yeah. You know, as some sort of special thing, but generally it's just the milk chocolate. Mm.
Do you get Kit Kat chunky?
Yes. The big ones?
Yeah.
Sort of like about the size of a, I'm trying to think of an American candy.
Like a regular size like candy bar.
It's about the thickness of that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's also like the mini Kit Kats too, where you get the chocolate all the way around the edge, because that's the best part, where you take that side chocolate off first.
The little baby ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then you get that much more of that.
I can't believe we have went from talking about Android Kit Kats.
Welcome to the British Tech Network Candy Show, everyone.
And the excitement
that's
is
what happened
than the operating system.
Our next story
that's
is going to be about Tim Tams.
Yeah, so I'm going to get this back on track now. So we're going to move on to, because we just talked about Android. Of course, we've got iOS 8 rumors. We've got
it's coming.
Yeah, well, WWDC is next week, next Tuesday. In fact, at this time, I think this time next week, Big Tim will be up on the stage doing his thing and telling us all about iOS 8, iPhone. Well, maybe not iPhone 6, actually. It'll be
the next iPhone,
yeah. Certainly iOS 8, probably some kind of new hardware, possibly a watch, though. I'm not convinced about that. And some other things. So, just to kind of run down the current top rumors, kind of digging about the internet. The general consensus is there's not going to be any major change in design. Visually, it's going to be the same as iOS 7. There might be some tweaks and things like that, but it's generally going to be the same. Health Book, we've known about this for a while, so I think we can be fairly confident Health Book's coming along. General consensus is we're going to have a better Siri, which I think kind of makes sense. They wouldn't exactly make it a worse Siri, and I can't imagine them making it the same.
For Paul, it's going to be any Siri, right?
Well, yeah.
Because you guys still have trouble with it over there?
Well, I don't have too much of a trouble, but I don't really have an... to you guys, probably I sound like I've got an accent, but to other Scottish people, I don't actually have that much of an accent.
It is mild.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can tell I'm Scottish, but you can't tell, you know, it's not like an Aberdonian accent or something like that.
Yeah, I can't cut it with a knife like some people.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually okay, but I know a lot of Scots have a problem with it. And Irish as well have a similar issue. But I only really use Siri for setting timers when I'm cooking something. Mm-hmm. I'll stick some oven chips in the oven and I'll tell Siri to remind me in 10 minutes when I've got to go and turn them over or something.
Yeah.
Except on Saturday, actually. Sorry, I'm rabbit holes all over the place here.
Okay.
On Saturday, I was just playing with it and I asked my phone to call my wife and it asked me which wife.
Yeah, buddy. Nice. Now,
in my defense, it's because my wife as her maiden name is in my phone and my wife as her married name is in my phone. So it hadn't actually connected the two.
So it had two contact cards for her, yeah.
A likely story.
iOS 7 player edition.
Nice save.
Well, think about it. That goes down in Utah on a daily basis. So.
Yep. Which wife would you like to call? Yeah.
So I think a better Siri is fairly obvious it's going to happen. What I'd like to see actually with Siri is... I would like to see more of the API updated so that you could actually see some apps doing some cool stuff with Siri.
Oh, man. If you could hook Siri into, like, doing cool stuff in, what's the two big ones, Drafts and Launch Center Pro?
Yes.
Like, once those guys can hook it up, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Even being able to launch apps and then actions off the back of it.
That's it. I mean, I think that's where... And they're going to have to, because Cortana in Windows Phone can do that. Yeah. There's an API and, you know, it's all hooked into the apps.
Yeah, right now you can launch an app with Siri, but you can't do anything. Like, you can tell Siri to open whatever the app is that you want. You know, if you're Doc, you go open 2048. but it won't do anything beyond that.
Yeah. No, whereas, yeah, Cortana, you can do actions within the app.
Yeah. See, I just want it for like the driving thing. So the main things I use when I'm driving is Spotify and Downcast for listening to podcasts. Uh-huh. So if Siri was able to say, Siri, open Downcast, play my, I've got three categories, my daily tech playlist, and just start from the beginning. And it just played through, and that would be superb. Same with Spotify, being able to ask it just to play a playlist or say, play this radio station or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That would be very cool. That
kind of stuff.
Now, you know what's funny about that, though, is I've been using Pocket Cast, a.k.a. Cast on the iOS, for a while now. And now I recently just wanted to check out the new, iTunes update and go back to the regular Purple Podcast ass. I call it the Nexium Podcast app. And when... It can play podcasts based off of Siri, but you won't get, there's no like kind of playlist thing. Yeah. And they got syncing kind of whacked right now. It's still not perfect, but it's better than ever before. I'm guaranteed going to go back to Cast, but I just promised myself I'd give it 30 days with this thing, because a lot of people that I've been trying to just get into podcasts, they don't want to buy any apps yet. They want to see if they like podcasts first. Yeah. So I've been a little bit impressed, but I will agree with you that it would be nice if they had certain app integrations. But see, the scariness is, I guess, to me, and I'm going to be the one. Everyone on this call would be the one to get the question when it doesn't work. I was on in there and I told Siri to do this and Siri did something different. So right now, Apple has the benefit of it being so shut that you're not going to have any random mistakes, because when you're Cortana, you have a huge handful of apps, right? Let's give her a shopping basket full of apps. When you're Apple and you let this integration open, you have a metric crap ton of apps.
That's true.
That could do all kind of goofiness to the API. And as soon as someone screws it up, it's not, Mike's backyard wrist letting, app company that did it wrong. It's Apple that did it wrong. You know what
but
I mean?
Also,
no one's going to blame Mike for letting all your data out to the NSA or anything like that. They're going to blame Apple. So they have to be extremely careful once they let this open. Because I've said many times, I would love to be able to say, hey, Siri, can you tell that I'm running? How about you open Runkeeper so I don't have to like trip over a curb when I'm trying to start the app when I'm starting to head down the street,
Yeah.
But I think also Siri is a system-wide service to tap into. And if you tap into that poorly, Lord only knows what will happen. So there's a good chance that, the whole reason that it hasn't happened yet is again, precisely that. And you're exactly right, Doc. It won't be somebody saying, Mike broke my phone and did this thing that I don't like. It's going to be Apple did it.
Yeah. They have the worst. They have the worst. This one is the case where it's always the parents' fault. For Apple, when they do it, they're the parent. The kid, aka the app, can go and stab someone in the foot. Nobody cares. It's always the parents' fault, which unfortunately doesn't happen in real life here.
Some other rumors: it's iTunes Radio. It's going to be broken off in a separate app. I just like iTunes Radio. Period. I'm not really, if it could just come to the UK, that would be fantastic. I don't really mind if it's a separate app or if it's integrated somewhere. I just like it. Thanks. If we do that. Also going
to
add,
it's not all it's cracked up to be, sweetheart. You know that, right?
Well, you see, is it like Spotify Radio? Or is it the same as or
it
better?
It wants to be.
Right, okay. See, I really like Spotify Radio.
It's sort of Pandora-y, at least in my experience. But the problem is, whatever algorithm they're using to set up the definitions has been unhappy for me. I actually wrote about this over on Mac Observer, because my definition of Pet Shop Boys Radio is dancey poppy music, by British people with a drum machine, and from the early 80s until now.
Yeah,
because the Pet Shop Boys are still making records and I love them. And iTunes thinks Pet Shop Boys Radio should be any band from the 80s where at least one member was wearing guyliner. And that's not the same definition I have.
You're going to run into that problem anytime you let a computer make those definitions. But it is very good at taking your suggestions as you, you know, thumb things up, give the finger, and move them over to the side. I use Spotify and iTunes Radio. I use both.
Right.
I use Spotify Premium. And oh my God, can I tell you, my world just got rocked on Spotify Premium recently. We'll talk about that in the picks. But iTunes Radio for me, a couple of things I really, really enjoy about it. It has a little bit more vastness than Spotify. Spotify is still missing some tracks. With 20 million strong, that does not equate to 500 million. I'm sorry, not even close. Mm-hmm. So you get a much broader range on iTunes Radio. And you can ask iTunes Radio something really, really, really weird and avant-garde. Like, I want to have Harry Connick Jr., but not the sad, you know, like so sexy that the girl in my car is getting excited, Harry Connick Jr. I want you to play the, you know, Louisiana Swing Cat, and it knows the difference.
Right. Okay.
Because there's two Harry Connick Jr. Yeah. There's the one that is like secretly making love to your girlfriend through her ears. And then there's the one that just plays like, you know, kick butts, rockabilly music, and it knows the difference. And I think that's cool. Spotify does it, nor does Pandora. It thinks any, you know, dude, it mixes Buble with Connick, and that ain't the same. Right. They're not even close to the same. Yeah. Connick's way cooler. Mostly because he's acting in sci-fi movies.
This might belong down in the picks part too, but I'm on the Android App Addict show, and we always listen to, we've come across so many music apps. Have you guys ever used one called Songza?
Songza? Yes. Yes. Isabel.
What is it? It's actually curated by humans rather than just a machine. And that's my go-to music app now, and I can't get away from it for some reason. I've tried a couple other things.
Here's the thing is that I tried it on iOS, and there were a couple of playlists that I really enjoyed, and they turned out to be maybe an hour and a half of music, so I would play them like for a long time, and I would start hearing the same stuff again. But I thought it was cool, and the thing about Songza that's really awesome is like you turn it on and it goes, it's Memorial Day afternoon. Are you having a barbecue, washing the car, playing at the beach? And then you pick one of those things and then it says, what kind of stuff do you want to hear? Do you want to hear country or rock or hip hop or 80s or dance music, whatever? And then it's got playlists for you. It's really awesome.
Yeah, my favorite station on there is actually, I'm here for the Android side, but it's Songs from Apple Commercials is my absolute favorite station. And
oh, that's funny.
I just assume that it ran out of music because there's only been so many Apple commercials with the those kind of songs.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a great playlist for me personally.
Yeah, I found like the hip hop bangers or whatever it is, and it's only like an hour or so, and I'm like, I know there's more than this.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also
room. Okay, I was going to say, everybody make a bookmark in your brain right now about this song thing, right? Because I'm going to fix your song problem when we get down to cool things, okay? Okay. Just make a bookmark right here and, you know, like pinch yourself, snap a rubber band, but hold this spot in your brain.
Okay, holding that spot. There's also HD audio, supposedly. Now, this kind of makes sense because I think pretty much iTunes is the only people that aren't doing HD audio. I'm not much of an audiophile, so I'm not sure it would really bother me. I know, Doc, this probably something that really bothers you, that it doesn't do HD audio, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely. Absolutely.
Yes, so that may be coming. Also,
what is HD audio? I keep hearing this. I know what makes video high def. What makes audio high def?
A bigger bit rate?
It's a bigger bit rate. And what happens is if you've ever had the experience of listening to like a pair of, say, like $1,200 Grados, which are headphones, reference headphones, or listen, like, well, Kelly, you and I both own B&W speakers, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you know when we're at our house and we're listening to it and you hear someone playing the keyboard and you can hear the key pop back up, or we listen to someone playing the guitar, you can hear the finger slide, you can hear the breath, you can even hear their mouth is getting pacey and the tongue sticking to the roots of their mouth. That's HD audio. Whereas you hear that on crappy speakers, you just hear the music and it's good. It gives you, you know, the ability to dance and, you know, maybe do a little twerking when no one's watching, you know, twerking stormtroopers and whatnot. Your twerking has caused a disturbance in the force.
That's what I hear.
But
was that supposed to be an Alan Guinness accent there?
No. That, sorry. Never mind. Stop that.
No, he's not greedy. Anyway,
there's a huge difference when you hear it. And, you know, like, I can appreciate that because I grew up working in an audio store. I mean, from the time I was like a little kid up until grown folks, until literally we closed the store like 2 years ago because my parents just needed to retire and I didn't want to take over retail. But when you grow up listening to really good audio, having everything squished down to iPod mode was a little bit irking, but I took it for the portability of having everything I wanted to have in my pocket. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, now I'm at the point where I don't want to make that concession anymore. I don't think it's fair as an audiophile that I have to make that concession just because it's portable, because the hardware has gotten better so much. Okay. So that I almost backed that Toblerone stupid MP3 player.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
the Neil Young one.
Yeah.
So, but then
I just couldn't bring myself to do it. It was too expensive.
So is it bitrate? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yes, it is a combination of bitrate. It's and so Paul brought that up correctly. So the bit rate and the file size is what it's going to be. But if I'm already getting crap from AT&T for blowing holes in my cap right now, thanks for changing the audio. All bets are off.
That's one thing I could tell the difference in bit rate between like Pandora and Slacker Radio when I would listen side by side to those on my phone. I'm not much of an audiophile, but even to my untrained ear, I could hear just a lack of area, you know, I guess like the lows and the highs were just missing on some songs.
Well, you know, an easy way to tell it for anyone who's listening who's not an audiophile, listen to almost any audio based podcast out there and then do yourself a favor and listen to like one episode of Matt Geek Gab, because Hamilton is such a tweak that theirs is like perfect. Like, and everyone, he gives us the instructions on how to copy it. We can't do it the way Hammy does it. Hammy's is perfect. And I've been trying for 3 years and I know what I'm doing and I can't get it as good as he does. And that's a good example of how good it can be off of a standard issue, you know, audio podcast that he's not even putting out in HD audio, but he's their source is so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm. When nobody's talking, it's just silence and nothing else. Something like that. I like to hear that too. No agenda show gets me that way sometimes.
And Wheelie, I gotta say, I listened to The Big Show the other day. Mm. Man, you did an epic job tightening that tank up. It was really nice the other day.
The Big Show. I didn't do The Big Show the other day. That would have been you.
No. He said you set up the studio. He said he was on the phone with you for like hours on end trying to get it all tightened up.
Oh, yeah, making everything work.
Yeah, I have to be completely honest here, though. I'd love to take credit for that. But essentially, I was sitting at the other end doing work. And every now and again, he'd come up and go, "Is that microphone working?" And I'd say, "Yes."
Yeah.
Well, you should have took that one.
No. That's not how it happened. Try this again.
Yeah, no, I had very little to do.
Why, thank you, is how this goes. And I'm glad my audio expertise could benefit the entire British Tech Network. That's what you said.
If you just had those kind of hours for the rest of us to get our audios tuned in like that. This is not so many hours in a week.
Yeah, you could do it as software as a service, Wheatley Audio Sweetening, and you just pay, and then you come on and you sit on hold and you drink, you know, you drink your tea and have some, you know, like Derbyshire pudding or whatever. And, you know, you just kind of help people out with their audio by saying, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, sure. And the PayPal
sweetening
account is
as a service. I love it.
Anyway, trying to get this train back on the road a wee bit.
And Lord, love you for trying, Paul.
Good luck.
iTunes Radio, I suppose, is also going to have an iWatch connection, but we know that there's no confirmation about the iWatch at all. But supposedly, some leaked screen grabs have showed some kind of integration with iWatch, and equally iWatch and the HealthBook app as well. Now, the final one that I just want to talk about, and I'm a bit scared to go into this one because the other ones I didn't think was going to have much to talk about, and we managed to kill a good 15 minutes on those ones. Split screen apps. Discuss.
It's easy.
Sorry?
I said that's easy. You said disgust. I said just add an ing to the end of that and there's the end of it.
No, I agree.
Yeah. So I the only experience I've got of split screen apps is really in the Xbox One, where they do that kind of snap thing, which takes up about a fifth of the screen. And I find that really, really clunky to try and use, is that kind of switching between the two. And I know it's you can do it with voice commands and things like that. And I know you can do it by doing some kind of, I think it's double pushing the Xbox button and things like that. But I just find it clunky. And I don't really have too much of a problem with how it currently works. I don't know. Is that,
I think if people were really honest with themselves, the folks like Vitici and the other like Mac community notables who say things about how great it is that they can create content on an iPad and do all of this work this way, I think part of the reason they like that is probably part of the reason I like it. If they're brutally honest with themselves, being able to minimize the distraction, or, you know, maybe because your iPad isn't a cellular iPad, it doesn't get push notification every time somebody replies to you on Twitter or whatever. And so you ratchet that stuff down on your iPad, and then you end up with a distraction-free area. And I think if people really were upfront about it, that's what they would say, is the thing that I like best about the iPad is I can really only do one thing at a time. And there are times in my life when I should only be allowed to do one thing at a time, because otherwise I can't concentrate. And I think that that would be one of the huge advantages to the iPad. So this is one of those things that I'm curious to see how they implement, but I also want to know if they're going to give me a switch to turn it off.
My take on that is kind of different in the fact that I'm from the school of, if you're distracted, then you ain't loving what you're doing. So do something else and come back to it when you got all your heart into it. That doesn't really bother me. But I will say, it's one of these things that I often equate to the Santa Claus feature. It sounds really good on paper. It sounds really cool because everybody else has it. But when you actually have it, you'll probably never use it. Because even right now, I have no problem with doing a hand swipe across, getting to the browser, selecting mm-hmm. what I need, hand swiping back, pasting in what I need. So I already can do multiple apps. No, they're not on the screen at the same time, but I just slide them back and forth. If I could see it the way I see it as my desktop with my beautiful gigantic LG right next to it, then maybe. But when I take my MacBook Pro away from this LG and we are at the coffee shop, I don't split my screen. I leave my apps as they are, and I again swipe them back and forth using my hand. And that works perfectly fine, because the metaphor is exactly the same on my iPad as it is on the way I set my MacBook up. Now, there are people who I think they're equating the dual monitor setup to split screen, but trying to stuff it into a little monitor, and that just doesn't quite work. It doesn't have that same feel, that same amount of room when you're letting the app have space to breathe and do its thing. I have equated to Spaces back when Spaces first came out, and I've just stuck to that. And so the way it works right now doesn't really faze me. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Paul. My other experience is with my Xbox One. And when it gets to be a pain in the butt is when sometimes you go to snap something and it breaks the thing that you snapped. So I have been full on to a FIFA tournament and I had to go snap to TV to set a recording, and I go to set it back and like there's Rooney stuck on the wing. He can't move. The whole app is frozen. Mm. So like, I don't want to, you know, do an app like that and have it crash when I split the screen because the processor caught a hick. And that would be really crappy if you're like, you know, 800 words into your article and it's done, right? So I don't think we need that multitasking. And in a way, I'm a strong believer that is a bigger myth. Most people can't actually do it when it comes time to do it, which goes back to what Kelly said.
I gotta agree with Doc. I've got a Samsung phone that purportedly does that, and I've had it turned off so long I don't even remember how it's supposed to function that way. I never would use that.
Right.
On my phone.
But with Android, you've got the whole kind of Google, the ability to kind of share things that Android puts in between the apps, which you don't have in iOS. I'd quite like to see that.
That is a rumor for iOS 8. There should be better inter-application operability. That is one of the ticks on the rumors list.
Now, that is a little different situation. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Having more of that open. And also the ability to add the swipe keyboard. Because when I used an Android phone, that's the one thing that I was so gutted that I lost out when I came back to iOS, was the, it's called swipe, isn't it? swipe keyboard.
Yeah, there's one. I honestly love the Google's own new keyboard themselves. That's the one I prefer.
Is that a swipe one or is it a predictive one?
It does both. Oh, right. It just does everything. Predictive swipe, anything you want to do, it just does it.
I've used an Android device for about a year, so it probably wasn't on with the last one I used.
That's kind of cool, Paul. You know, and then it's going to be painful for you. Is I think Apple's aversion to swiping and weird keyboards is because they're trying to perfect the voice input. Because so many people use their device on the road.
Yeah.
And it's still a little bit weird for some to talk to your phone while you're out there. But I use Siri so often that she's gotten really good at understanding my Ebonics or even my drunk mumbling. So the more you do it, like it equates it. And now she doesn't get as angry when I call her a bitch. You know, she lets it slide. I think that they're trying so hard to get that vocal input straightened out because that's going to be the zeitgeist for everything iOS and macOS once they get that nailed. So I think they're putting a lot of energy into that. So that makes the keyboard not as big a thing quite yet. But it, you know, I have played with swipe. I love it. I have an app on the iOS called SwiftKey, which kind of pretends to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so it's SwiftKey I was talking about, but that's its own app. And you basically have to write it in there, then copy and paste it out somewhere else.
And that's kind of a pain in the butt. So yeah. I would love to see SwiftKey sort of Sherlocked into. I'm sorry, SwiftKey. I don't mean to put that on you, but it'd be nice to have that Sherlocked into iOS.
Yeah.
And that'd be the best of both worlds, so to speak. And I will agree, I've played with the Android, like any keyboard thing.
Yep.
Yo, that thing is kind of epic.
Yeah,
very, very awesome.
It's pretty
obviously
awesome.
Apple's would be the last one without a swipe sort of keyboard. Now Windows 8.1's got it as well.
Really, built it? In. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Windows 8.1 has predictive and swipe, you know, just change around which way you're using it.
So is it just me? Sorry, go ahead.
No, and there's just a button next to the space bar on the Google keyboard. If you do want to, you know, say something, or you could say, okay, Google, when you're there, you know, it's still, you got the, you know, the voice integration when you want it, but you don't have to. You're not getting pushed into it by a poor keyboard.
Now, let me ask this question to the whole panel. Do you feel for us iOS types at this moment, we are XP'd into a corner in the sense that those of us who are listening to BTN or those of us here talking on BTN, yes, we would enjoy all of this swipey keyboard and whatnot. But my mom, who's Esau, you know, her native tongue is Korean, so speaking English is difficult for her. She don't care. She just like the regular keyboard. And I think her and the majority of the minions out there, if you were to take the whole, you know, billion phones out there that maybe a couple million of us care about this and everybody else likes the regular keyboard the way it is and doesn't even know that there are options. So do you feel that the install base is one of the things that slows this down too? Are we XP'd at this point?
Ugh. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think my mom would care less about a better keyboard than about better dictation because I showed her, you know, mom, if you want to reply to my text, you just tap on this microphone and that's all you have to do. And then you talk to it and hit done and then you can send me a text like that. And I think if you ask my mom if she wanted a swipe keyboard or better voice dictation so that it understood her all the time, even if there was more background noise or things like that, I think she'd rather have the better dictation. And I think a lot of people are probably in that boat.
Yeah.
In the wild, I see a lot more voice dictation, especially for things like you said, Kylie, like even text messaging their friends. I see a lot of that in the last year, I would say, more than ever before.
Well, it's a logistical thing because of the keyboard. You know, my mom is having a hard time still migrating to the digital keyboard from what she used to have, which was a phone that had a whole bunch of actual little buttons on it because it flipped open in the middle. So I think, you know, and logistically, like those keys can only be so wide and only be so tall and still allow you enough room to see the screen so you can see what you're typing. I think it's the same sort of setup and you know, logistically there's only so far you can really take a keyboard on something like that. I think if you went and asked regular people who are running iOS 7 right now about the keyboard, I think most of them would say make the shift key do something better, and less people would say what I really want is the keyboard my friend has on his Android phone.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I noticed it the most, and I never noticed this before because of where I live, but I went home during Christmas, and in a freezing sub-zero weather out there, my sister, who is a non-tech person, and my niece were going back and forth, and they were sending text messages by hitting the button and, you know, dictating, because you do not want to take your hands out of your pocket on the East Coast when you're like, you know, 10 degrees below zero.
You can hit that button with your nose, by the way.
Yeah. Like, I can't even talk. No, what they were doing, they figured this out. I didn't have to teach them. They figured out to press the button on the headphone. Now, if only I can get them to stop holding the headphone mic up to their mouth, because it's been designed to be where it is, you know, they would get better results. And then you can't tell that to anybody who uses a phone who's not a tech person. They all got the, you know, like they're putting a cord in their mouth, like they're eating their hair or something. And then, you know, but just to watch them do that. And I was like, oh, you guys use a Siri dictation. They're like, so what? I'm like, you use a Siri dictation. They go, what's that? I go, well, don't you just send text by talking? Oh, yeah, that's cool. Well, why do you do that? Because it's freaking cold. So they figured it out without knowing anything about what it is. Or they were told by Oprah, I assume, because that's how that's where they get their tech from. You know,
It's one of those features that when people figure out or whatever, this is one of the things I think that is sort of the Siri's secret weapon is I'm in the middle of doing 19 other things. And as it happens, I need to know if it's going to rain this afternoon. And so you ask Siri, is it going to rain later? And Siri will tell you. Mm-hmm. And it's not, look at the thing I can do on my phone and showing that off. It's utility. This is a fast, easy way for me to get the information that I need that keeps me from having to pull out of whatever the activity is I'm in the middle of and then go do this and then go back to the thing that I was doing before. So I think Mike Rose over at Tua, I think he had the best example of, like, I was trying to wrangle two kids out the door. We were, you know, the cab was waiting and we were trying to do everything. And I hadn't pulled up the movie times yet so we could go to the movies. And so I was able to ask, you know, as we were walking out the door and I'm locking behind me and making sure the kids are in the cab and whatever. And, you know, I can hit the button and say, Siri, what time does this movie play near me? And then it said, here, the theater's near you. And then he was able to pick a theater. And then once they were in the cab and actually going somewhere, he had the chance to buy tickets and, you know, take care of all of that ahead of time. But it was really the opportunity as a strictly utilitarian move to be able to do that. And I think that the dictation is the same sort of thing. People aren't blown away by how great the dictation is. They, like, aren't blown away at all. And to me, that is the most exciting piece of watching technology evolve through this time is when it stops being magic and it starts being like a TV or a microwave. And it's that thing of like, this is weird. I don't know what to do with it. And then you end up with, you know, you can't use it for 2 days or whatever. And you go, oh my God, how did I live before this was a thing that I could do?
My mind is directions to something, and it gets me right there. But Doc, I don't think at this point Apple could add predictive text and even the word association where it knows what your next word is before you even start typing it. They can add all that stuff easily now. It's been out there long enough. That's not a big deal at this point, I don't think.
Yeah, it's maybe just one of those things that is they're scared of putting it in because, to Doc's point, it's the XP effect, because we've got such a large user base of muggles, if you will. Are they going to be freaked out if this thing starts predicting what the words they're going to put in next are going to be?
People are going to start going in. I say is looking at my phone, and it's just T9, you know, doing what T9 supposed to do from back in the day, but now it's gotten good.
Right. Right.
Some researchers, some postgraduate researchers at Columbia University have managed to work out a way to put Apple apps on an Android device. This was a BBC report. Apparently, they've got no plans to turn this into a commercial product. But essentially what it is it's not really using virtualization. It's using some other kind of magic to do this. It's getting sort of mixed reviews, it has to be said. The Apple apps are running fairly slowly on the device. And the apps that require the iPhone camera, GPS system or Bluetooth perform fairly poorly. But it's interesting this is happening because... I think it's interesting on one hand that somebody's actually putting an effort in here and it is actually physically possible. But on the other hand is most of the last conversation there was relating to, I would like these things that's on an Android device on my Apple device. And so, you know, how many of you would actually be interested if somebody managed to open this up in some kind of jailbreak? Well, sorry, let me start the question with, Eric, is this something you'd be interested in if this became available as a commercial product, so you could install any iOS apps?
Well, it's a proof of concept right now. Sure. And I think at the present time, developers are developing for both, typically. And there's not any breakout or killer app that's missing on either one. I mean, well, there may be a couple, but I don't, especially if it's as crippled as it seems to be. I don't see this, but I guess it could make it a lot easier for developers if they only had to develop for one. Sure. Maybe they could move on to other, you know, their next project faster.
Yeah. So, Kelly, Doc, from your point of view, is this something that you'd be interested in if it went the other way? Is there anything in Android? Obviously, we've talked about the keyboard and things like that. But, you know, having, for example, I completely blanked on the name of it, but the Google Type Siri service, which is more of a kind of concierge, having that more integrated into the phone, is that something you'd be interested in if somebody came up with that?
I just like to see the whole space moving along, because it ends up sort of becoming something available for all the platforms.
Yeah.
So I think from the discovery notion and from the notion of just the space growing in general, I mean, the mobile space at large, I think that's a great thing. I also find that a lot of applications are native, sometimes for no reason. They would be perfectly well as an HTTP implement, maybe through a phone gap or something like that. And they become native because there's a certain amount of, you know, like male measuring exercise that gets to say, hey, I did this, versus it had to be done. And I hate when I run into those apps because they become kludgy when they work really good as a web service, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I think the more apps that do, like Kelly says, do a reality check and realize that you can get away with an HTTP an HTML5 implementation, and you stick to that because it's the right thing to do, is much better than saying, hey, we work on Windows and iPhone and Android and BlackBerry, because really all I did was repackage an HTML thing. I don't like those apps. They drive me insane, because the native one oftentimes ends up being more clunky.
Yeah, I mean, the requirement to have an app in your corporation now is like the Flash splash screen of kind of the early 2000s.
Oh, certainly. And yeah. I think also, so first of all, Doc has very strong feelings about Flash. The other thing that would, I don't know about concern me, but just because I can run an iOS app doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to get access to those things within Android that I really like, that those apps are able to utilize. And I think that's one of the big differences. And you know, just because I can run the iOS app that I want to be running on an Android device doesn't mean I'm going to get the notifications in the really nice notification center in Android. It doesn't mean that this thing is going to work, or that I'm going to be able to do this thing better, or it's going to smooth off what I think is a rough edge in iOS. Like, just because I can run the iOS app on an Android device, does that mean that I will get access to the swipe keyboard, or am I going to be limited to a plain ordinary keyboard because the system interaction at that low of a level is just not there? Yeah. I don't know. And even if it were possible, I don't know if I would want to, because I would almost feel like having both of them at the same time would just magnify the flaws more than it would enhance the positives. So I think for most folks, it would probably just end up being frustrating.
Yeah.
Again, people, not like listeners to the show, not panelists on the show, but regular, like the people who call us and ask us as panelists, us as listeners, what do you know about this? Here's this thing I heard. I want to do this thing. And they're looking to you for advice. Whenever I think of things, I think about it for myself. And then I think about what happens when my family calls me about this thing. And this is one of those moments where what happens when my family calls me about this makes me cringe.
Alan, I'm just trying to remember, there was a Windows story. I think we talked about it. It was either in the last show or the last show you were on. And it was it Nokia are taking a version of Android and actually skinning it to look like Windows. And so you're kind of getting the Windows Phone experience, but with the Android App Store.
Yeah, so the Nokia X is the Nokia. They've forked Android, but taken out all the Google bits and put in Microsoft Android stuff.
Right. Okay. So you're still not getting the Android App Store at that stage. You're just You're just getting the look.
You don't get the Play Store isn't still in there, but you could sideload standard Android apps because it is proper Android. Just then with a lot of Nokia and Tiles and Microsoft skinning and services on top.
Yeah. And so finally, in the news section, there was we're just going to have a wee quick look at the Nokia Lumia 630. So this is a new Nokia, extremely cheap phone, extremely cheap smartphone. It's coming to the UK, £89.
My goodness.
Yeah.
SIM-free unlocked.
Yep.
So, you know, could well end up on the, you know, £5 and £10 a month contracts sort of thing.
Not too much of a push. That's a complete just buy outright and use.
Yeah.
And this is so that we spoke about in the last Pocket Show. Jason Howell mentioned the Moto E was getting released. It would have been 2 weeks ago tomorrow, or it was getting announced. Sorry, 2 weeks ago tomorrow. The Motorola E, and that's basically exactly the same phone. I think it's slightly more expensive from memory, wasn't it? It was about 110, something like that. Mm. This is a ridiculously cheap phone, Windows phone. And it's not even for the emerging markets because it's actually coming for sale in the UK, which is kind of, it's interesting, but I would have expected this type of phone for it to be more intended for emerging markets.
Yeah, well, there's kind of, I mean, the Nokia Lumia 520 and 620 both did major gangbusters and massive amounts of volume for the Windows Phone market. I mean, advantages are Windows Phone runs really well on low-end hardware. Mm-hmm. So that's an easy one that they need to capitalize on. And the 630, there's two variants of it. The 630 standard. Confusingly, there's another 630, which is dual SIM. So that one is for emerging markets.
Oh, dual SIM. Because the Moto E didn't have any dual SIM options, did it? I don't believe. I'm just trying to Google it just now. I seem to remember that being a thing.
And then there is a 635, 635, which is 630, but does 4G. So the 630, both of them only do 3G. They don't do 4G. But there is a 635 if you want 4G.
And what's the price of the 635? Is that significantly more expensive?
I think they were talking 10 to 20 quid.
Right, okay. So if you're actually needing that 4G, I mean, in the UK, there's very few places.
Yeah, and if you're on the lower contracts, you're probably on a 3G contract, not a 4G contract, aren't you? So it does make sense not to bother sort of plugging that in there. I mean, basically, yeah, I mean, it's a great phone. Obviously, at that sort of price, it may well do quite well. I held a prototype device the other week and stuff, and yeah, felt nice. I mean, you know, it's got a 5-megapixel camera, 4.5-inch display, Snapdragon 400 processor, 1830 milliamp battery, comes in multiple colors.
This is an interesting move, because that is right in the nice price range for your sort of I wouldn't even like to put an age range on it, but maybe the age group that you would possibly give a second-hand or possibly even third-hand smartphone to. You know, like maybe you're, I don't know, 10 to 12-year-olds or something like that, where you're fairly confident they're going to drop it at some point, but you want to give them the opportunity to have a smartphone for play, you know, the games and things like that. Maybe that's too young, but do you know what I mean? The £89 price point could be quite interesting for that market, and then it gets them into the Windows ecosystem, and then when they're wanting another phone, they're then looking at the kind of the bigger boy Nokia ones. It's an interesting move.
Yeah, and I mean, you've also got it's got micro SD slot. So okay, it only comes with 8 gig, but you can put into up to 128 gig micro SD in it. So storage wise, go beyond plenty what people want. And remember, at that price point, it's still got free worldwide offline downloadable map sat nav, the Nokia Music full streaming service with no ads. And, you know, Nokia camera apps and the other things that are in there. And you get your 7 gig of SkyDrive storage free. Actually, you get 10 if you enable the camera roll backup. So, yeah, it should be quite an interesting contender.
Definitely. We'll watch that with keen eyes. This podcast and all the others on the BritishNet Network are brought to you by the awesome, awesome people at UK2. They provide all the bandwidth for all the shows and everything like that. If you head on over to BritishNetwork.com, you'll be able to find all of our old shows on there, right back to the very, very first ones of the shows that have been going for a while. UK2 provide all that service for us and all that bandwidth and all that server space so that we can have all those shows there for you to go back and listen to just how truly awful we were at the very beginning when we didn't know what we were doing. That sort of implies we know what we're doing now, which is possibly untrue. But anyway, if you head on over to BritishNetwork.com click on the sponsors link or BritishNetwork.com/sponsors, click on the UK2 link so that they know that we sent you. And also on that page, you'll find a whole bunch of voucher codes for free DNS, 20% off domain registration, all sorts of other cool stuff. Please use the click through there just so that they know that we sent you. And also just to say, for our American and non-UK listeners, I should say, all of these, albeit the company's called UK2, all the services are available for people outside the UK as well. You just have to pay in pounds, so you'll realise the pain when we have to buy all our stuff in dollars. Another sponsor that I just want to mention is the Network Union. Superb people. Basically what they do is they provide a layer of expertise and everything like that over BT's connectivity services and things like that. So if you are currently a customer or you're considering being a customer of BT, please give Network Union a shout and see what they can do. Nothing really changes in terms of your contracts or support or billing or anything like that. That's still with BT. What Network Union do is they can kind of come in as a bit in between, and they can help you with repricing your connectivity, looking at all sorts of other stuff like BT Business Broadband, upgrades from copper to fibre and all that kind of stuff. You still kind of keep the relationship with BT, but Network Union just kind of sit in between there to help you out. So please use the click through on the sponsors page as well. Go to Network Union and see what they can do for you. We've been assured that they will not do anything with your contact details, so please give them, if you're interested in anything, you know, give them your email address, your phone number. They'll not sell that information on. They'll not remarket it. They've assured us of that. It's just so they can get back in touch with you so we can see what we can do. So please support UK2 and support Network Union because they support the British tech work. Thank you very much. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, now it's time for our picks. And I have to say, I'm quite keen to hear what Doc has to tell us about music. So we're going to start with him. What is this amazing?
All right. Well, I got two picks, so I'm going to make you wait for the second one. Okay. The first one is very important and dear to me because Elevate is an application designed to allow you to do some games every day. But what it does is it makes your brain work better. Like, it increases your mental acuities. So it's kind of like a brain gem in your pocket. But the reason why Elevate is so cool to me, one of my best friends in the whole planet was a designer on this. Kelly, you know Umi, right? John Lewis, kid with the dress from Hawaii. Yeah. So Umi designed this app. It came out on Thursday or Friday. It's number 3 in the App Store right now. Like, that's like a big warm fuzzy to have one of my whiskey partners, you know, somebody to hang out with constantly. And he's been working really, really hard for years to get to the level of where he is. And for this is just a huge success. He's a good friend of mine. It's not going to cost you anything to try it out. There are in-app purchases to do certain things, but everyone should just try it anyway, because we could always all use a little bit more smartness. So there's Elevate. Go and check it out. The link is in the show notes. Okay. Now, the thing that I told you guys to remember your spot for. So we were talking about Spotify and music and, you know, like our radio and whatnot. So for those of you who don't know, one of the reasons why I'm forever getting drunk is I'm a DJ in a nightclub. And I normally DJ every weekend now. I used to be every day, but I'm smart now. I only do 2 days a week. And one of the most awkward moments in time is when someone rolls up on you and they go, well, can you play song X? And you think about it, and it's like, man, that's a really good idea. And maybe I didn't have it in my crate. Well, now, compliments of DJ2, which is an application from Algorithm, they have allowed you to have full Spotify integration. So when someone comes up to me and asks me to play West End Girls, like the original remix, and I didn't have it in my crate, I could literally go to Spotify and pull it in and mix it live. So it pulls it from Spotify straight to my mixer. And so now I can play. Now, yeah, it's all fun and dandy for, you know, your DJ. Well, say I'm not a DJ. Say I'm just Kelly and I just enjoy music. First of all, the app currently, while it's on sale, is only $4.99. So it's $10 regularly, like $9.99. But there's a new feature in it called Auto Mix. So what happens, similar to your iTunes radio, your Spotify radio,
Okay, I'm going to jump right in here, Doc, though. Hold on. Back this whole train up a minute. Because what you need to do is tell people what the app actually does. The app mimics...
I'm going to explain this. Hold on.
Okay.
Guys, I'm going to explain this.
Yeah. Well, so, it mimics a couple of turntables like a DJ would have, a record on one and a record on the other, and then fade between the two and mix and beat match and all the kind of stuff that DJs do with a couple of record players. This gives you a digital equivalent of those old school controllers. So... when Doc's up there and he said, and you know, he's in the booth and he's playing whatever. And now here comes Kelly, who wants to hear the Montreal 12 inch of West End Girls, because that's a thing that I might do. There are Pet Shop Boys songs I like better, but that's a podcast for another day. And I would come up and say that. And now he has access to that through Spotify. But what he's doing is using that on one side and then using beat match and then fading over to it like you used to do with records. If you were a DJ back when records were a thing. So that's what that app does. Now here's why it's awesome.
Well, that was almost my explanation verbatim. So you saved me that. There is something that they added now that they didn't have before. There is a technology in it, and it's called Echo. Now you made me forget the name of it. It's called Echo something. I'll pull it up in a second. But what it does is it goes out similar to like a Pandora or whatever is, or a Shazam better yet. And it goes in, it not only finds you a song that has a matching BPM, it finds you a song that is harmonically mixed. And so what that means, all of us pro guys, we laugh at the DJs who can just do beats, but they can't do the harmonic blending. Because when you're able to pull in harmonics, you can make sure that a song sounds really, really good together, because they're basically in the same key as well as the same BPM. So now there's a beat. Echo Nest
is what you're looking for.
So now there's a feature where if I'm in there and I'm playing a song, I can go and press Spotify, I can press match, and it will go out and find me songs that match. But when you're in auto mix mode, like say I'm doing a barbecue this afternoon and everyone asked me to play music, but I don't want to sit there and man my DJ set the whole time. I can set it up for set my genre. And I literally listened to it for 5 hours the other day. It played the most epic set of old school hip hop without any mistakes. And honestly, and it didn't even double. Like, right. That's the part that's so impressive. There's 20 million songs out there, so it didn't even double. And it started playing things that I had totally forgotten about, sad to say, as a DJ. But, like, when it brings in an old remix of Onyx, Back the F Up, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. So I find myself in my house doing housework, and I'm dancing around on the ladder while I'm cleaning the ceiling fan. Like, it's pretty insane. So even if you're not a DJ, you want to go out and spend a half a 10 spot on this just to have it auto mix what you're normally listening to in Spotify radio.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you might also figure out you can do a little DJ stuff too. And everything except for Spotify, the things that are on your iTunes library, you could actually save them out as a recording. Mm-hmm. But licensing reasons, of course, you can't do that with Spotify. But by saving the ones that's in your iTunes library out as a recording, now for the young guys out there, you can give this little mixtape to your girlfriend or your wannabe girlfriend, because that's how I did it. And it worked for me. So I'm assuming it still works these days the guy makes a girl a mixtape and be like, hey, girl, listen to this. You know how I really feel about you. There's that. So definitely something you got to try, even if it's just to goof off with. Mm-hmm. And you could do it on iPhone too. iPhone, I believe right now is like $2 for the iPhone app.
Yeah, it's half price. It's $1.99 right now.
It's a good app. I use it all the time at least 2 times a year for my daughter's birthday parties. It's not quite the same audience I imagine Doc is performing to, but, you know, it blasts out the variety of Disney tunes, like some of the best. So it's all good.
So your daughter doesn't like old school hip hop?
She does not.
Is that what I'm hearing?
My older daughter is currently going through a Billy Joel phase for some bizarre reason. I'm not really sure.
Everyone does. It's okay.
I'm not really sure where that's come from because I don't listen to it. it's on her Spotify playlist. It's got a whole bunch of Billy Joel in it. Anyway, that's another story for another day. But that's an awesome app. It's really, really powerful as well for the money. It's cool.
I was a little disappointed when Doc said, when you said that this may still work today. I thought you actually had used this, made the mixtape with this app and got the date. But okay.
My girlfriend wouldn't dig that. She's trying to kill me. But I can definitely tell you it's a lot of fun and you should just get in there and play with it. And honestly, Paul, if you literally spend about, say, 10, 20 minutes goofing off with it, you'd get the mixing down pack because it helps you figure out how to mix.
Because, I've got to be honest, 5-year-olds don't really care if it's mixed correctly.
This is very true. This is exactly true. Yeah, it's definitely worth the play with. Go for it.
But it is cool. And what I really like about it, and this is a ridiculous small point, is the actual discs. Spin so the cover art that goes in the discs, they actually spin.
Yeah,
it's quite cool.
That's nice.
Kelly, would you like to go and can sure. Somebody else volunteer to jump halfway in and explain Kelly's pick?
No, okay, so there's my pick is sort of twofold. So OmniFocus is a to-do sort of app, but it's really powerful and it does lots and lots of things. So you can track projects, you can track time with it. You can do a whole lot. Now, it's not inexpensive, but it is super, super powerful. So if you are somebody who has a lot going on all the time, maybe you host a podcast and you guest on another and you have a third thing that you do. And then there's like another side project and then you've got day job stuff. And then there's like whatever crap you're doing around your house at the same time. You have a lot of stuff happening and it's much easier to be able to track all of that in something like OmniFocus. It doesn't have to be OmniFocus. I'm just partial. So OmniFocus just released a new version of their macOS app, version 2.0, which is a very big deal. If you had the old one, you can upgrade. It's really, really great to see the new version. I really love it. But anyway, there's also iOS versions. There's versions for iPhone and for iPad. And if you're using the iPhone or iPad version, everything syncs, of course, but you can use Siri to send something to a specific reminders list because you can have more than one set of reminders within the reminders app in iOS 7. So if you set one of those lists to be the one that syncs to OmniFocus, then you can tell Siri, remind me to mow the lawn at 11 a.m. tomorrow. And then what will happen is when you send it to that specific list, that list get synced to OmniFocus. And then no matter where I am, because I'm using OmniFocus everywhere, at 11 tomorrow morning, it goes, hey, you said to remind you to mow the lawn. I'm reminding you.
That's pretty cool.
And this is a thing. This is one of those moments where OmniGroup figured out how to do this within OmniFocus. So they set up all of the stuff to make it so that this particular list would send all of its stuff, would be readable by OmniFocus. And so OmniFocus reads all of that stuff. And for me, this was huge because you have to be one of the things about using any sort of system, you know, if it's a getting things done system or whatever, is that you need to be able to trust it. And in order to trust it, it needs to be really easy to enter everything so that you've got it all in one place and you know that's where it is. So when you have that great idea, but you're in the car, you can always just hit the button and go, you know, remind me tomorrow to start this project. Remind me tomorrow to buy this domain name from UK2. Remind me to whatever it is that I need to be doing. And then that shows up in OmniFocus for you to do all your other stuff with. You can put your contexts on it. You can add it to projects. You can do all the other stuff that you need to do within OmniFocus. So the fact that you can hook Siri up to it, to me, is really, really fantastic. So
definitely. Yeah, that is really cool. I use OmniFocus and I got it from my iPhone and I have to admit I've not really used it because I use the desktop version heavily and I couldn't really find. It's one of them funny things when you get a new to do, you know, getting things done app, you almost have to give yourself a to do list item to kind of integrate it into your workflow.
Yeah,
which seems sort of counterintuitive, but that really kind of helps because it sort of gets out of the way then, and all it's really being is a conduit to get that information onto you know, your OmniSync server or something like that. That's really cool.
Yeah. To be setting and the thing I like about it is I do a lot of like review on my iPad. And so now all that stuff is there.
Cool.
So it all sits in my inbox or whatever. And for me, finding the Siri piece was really, really great because it makes it even easier to enter stuff because I don't have to launch an app. I don't even have to unlock my phone. Nice. I can just tell Siri, go do this, and it totally works.
That's very cool. I will be setting that up tomorrow. That's great. OmniFocus, of course, I think it's about a £15 app, I think. I'd have to actually check. But, of course, then the whole kind of article that is being pointed to there, which we'll put in the show notes, is, of course, free because it's in the Mac Observer. But I think OmniFocus is about £15. But personally, I think it's worth it for the...
And for what it does. As do I. But the thing to remember is that they basically don't have sales. So if you look at it and you go, yeah, that looks great, I'm going to wait until it goes on sale, it never goes on sale.
Sure, yeah.
There's no such thing. But it's, as an app, it's a really great app, and it's just gotten better with the new version.
So it's 13...
Which...
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's $19.99 in the States for OmniFocus, and it's $13.99 in the UK.
$13.99. Okay, so the new Mac version... takes a lot of design cues from what they've done on the iOS versions. So now they look much more similar because the iPad and iOS versions got much bigger updates recently. And so the Mac version was sort of lagging behind as far as UI and the way some of the things were laid out. And so now they all look much more similar, even though they're all on different devices. So it's very, very cool. It is super powerful. It's a little bit intimidating sometimes to get started with. Yeah. Network Luminary Don McAllister has released a free episode of Screencast Online dealing specifically with OmniFocus 2. So if you are interested in it and you want to find out more, you can always find out from Don.
Yeah. And if you're actually a paid subscriber for to Screencast Online, the OmniFocus 1 is quite an in-depth version as well. So you probably, a lot of that transfers over. So it's worth looking at that. But very cool. Eric, what have you got for us this evening, sir?
All right, I'm used to bringing multiple apps in one show, so I'm just going to throw these out there really quickly then, if that's okay. Yeah, sure. I did mention earlier the Google Plus update. If you've got a Nexus device or a newer phone, check that out if you like Google Plus. I personally never use Facebook, and I'm always on Google Plus, and I really like this new update. It makes things a lot more obvious than the way they had it before as far as posting new content to it. Another app, I don't know if you guys have mentioned this before, the Amazon App Store. I like to tell this to all my friends who get new devices. The Amazon App Store is free from Amazon, and they offer this in the UK as well as the United States. They give you one free paid app every day, a different one every day.
Wow.
So you go back there every day and you check out, you know, sometimes there's something that you would not be interested in at all, but some of them are very great apps. And some of them are really good games too, if you're into playing games on your devices. But that's one thing that's a great bonus for using the Amazon App Store.
They really do a nice mix of the free apps, I've found. So like if you're a total gamer, you're only going to be happy some of the time. If you're a productivity nerd, you're only going to be happy some of the time. If you're a general utility, awesome thing I can do with my Android device person, it's only some of the time, but you still get exposed to all the other stuff. And so far, I haven't tried anything out that's been like, this is a horrible application. I can't believe they were giving it away. It's always been interesting. And like the stuff that I've actually downloaded has been interesting and at least reasonably well done, even if it wasn't necessarily something that totally suited my needs or was a game that I thought was particularly fun. They're all still really well done. It's not like they're just sort of pawning crap off on you for free.
Yeah, and one other genre that they tend to do a lot is kids games too. If you don't want to spend a lot of money on some kids games, they throw quite a few in there, it seems like, as well. My last app is called Dosecast. It's basically if you've got an elderly person or even a younger person who has to take a lot of medicine, this is a very handy app that can help them remember to take their meds. And you can plug in what medicine they got to take at what time and what days. And it gives you a persistent every 5 minutes notification to your device that, hey, take this until you finally say, hey, I took it or I'm taking it now or skip it.
Cool.
That's awesome.
I, I don't take any drugs myself, but I've used this. I've been trying to bring this to my own podcast, and I keep forgetting to bring it. Right. And it's really getting annoying because I've got a drug in there called placebo. It keeps popping up all the time that I need to take that.
Very cool. And is Dosecast free? Is it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Very cool. Superb. Some good ones there. Alan, what have you got for us this evening?
I was going to highlight Folders Beta. It's a file manager, which has only been possible on Windows Phone with the Windows Phone 8.1 latest update. It's free currently as a beta. It's going to go paid when it comes out of beta, but they've said anyone who's played with it during beta will get to keep it for free. So that's always useful. It's got, as well as local file management, it's also got integration to SkyDrive. So from within the One app, you can go pull down some more files onto your phone from your SkyDrive and vice versa. Now, there is going to be a free official file manager coming as part of 8.1 final release called Files. But, you know, never hurts to have some options, does it?
Sure.
And the integration to SkyDrive, and it's quite a nice, clean Metro look and feel. So, yeah, worth a try for free.
Very nice. Very nice indeed. Mine, very quickly, is Every Post for iOS. This was one of the, I can't remember if it was 5 or 6, but it was 5 or 6 about to break in Macworld. And I downloaded it in Macworld. It was a Mac... Ken Ray kind of pointed me at it because I didn't actually follow the 6 about to break or whatever it was at Macworld. And I downloaded it because it sounded like a really cool idea. And I didn't really start using it. It was kind of sitting on like screen 3 of my phone. And if I kind of thought about it, I'd used it. I moved it up to the launch bar on my phone just because to try and force myself to use it. And it is incredible. At a very basic level, all it really allows you to do is allows you to type in a tweet and then allows you to switch on different social networks that you can send it to. And that includes everything. It's got Google Plus, Facebook, Twitter. It then has, I've not actually used this, but it's got a Dropbox one. I'm assuming it just kind of sends a text file to Dropbox. I'm not really sure about that one. It's maybe a backup purpose. Email, you've got LinkedIn, you've got all of those, and you can enable them and disable them. And the cool thing about it is it doesn't just post the same thing. So basically you write your core message on the first screen, and then you swipe and it takes you to whatever you actually assign the priority order. So in my phone, it goes Twitter first, and then it allows you to customize it for Twitter. And then you swipe again and it allows you to customize it for Facebook and so on and so forth, which is really, really cool. And one of the nice things about it is I'll put something on Twitter that I actually think my Facebook friends would probably be interested in that, but I need to add a bit more context because my Facebook friends are generally less techie than the people who follow me on Twitter. So perhaps the link needs maybe a couple of sentences just kind of explaining what exactly it is I'm referring to. So it allows you to kind of do that customization as you go through. It also allows you to pull in different friend lists as well from the different social networks as well, which is really cool. It has quite a nice interface for pulling in photographs and videos and all that kind of stuff as well. But so it's Every Post. As I say, it was one of the 5 or 6 about to break. I can't remember what the number was at Macworld this year. And it is a very cool little app. And the most important thing is it's free. This is one of these apps, I've been using it that heavily, that I sort of really feel like I want to pay them something for it because they can't really be doing very much with it being free. So I'd kind of like to chuck them 69 pence or 99 cents or whatever, just so that it stays around and it's a service that exists. But it's pretty cool. Every Post, it's definitely worth a download. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you very much all for coming on. It's been a pleasure chatting with you this evening. I have yet to manage to make myself opposed target of getting this show under an hour, because we're now sitting at an hour and a half, but never mind. A couple of things I just want to mention before we sign off. First thing is the Bash. Tickets are available for the British Tech Network Bash. For those of you who maybe don't listen to the network as a whole or anything like that, and you don't understand what the Bash is, the Bash basically is our birthday anniversary. It happens generally the first or second week in July every year. And the idea is it's all of kind of the folk who listen to the shows and all of the hosts and the panelists that can kind of get to Birmingham. We all kind of meet up at a location in Birmingham that's, I think this year, it's the same place as we were last year. It's kind of a hall in a little place called Water Orton, just outside Birmingham. And we just spend the whole day. We do live shows. We have competitions going on. It's just an absolutely amazing day. Kids are welcome. So it's a whole family thing. Bring the husband, bring the wife, whatever. It is a really, really superb day. We have our curry the night before because most folk are kind of traveling a little bit. So we do a curry the night before. And in my opinion, one of the best curry houses I've ever been in my life. And it is right across the road from Ewan Rankin's house, which you've got to kind of wonder if who was first there. Was Ewan first there and then they built a curry house opposite him because they knew they were going to make money? Or did he move there because the curry house was there? I've never quite worked that one out. But that curry house is fantastic. And then you have the bash the next day. The bash is £25 per over 16. So under 16 is a free of charge. That isn't an entry ticket. That covers your food and drink for the day. So you're there all day. So we're going to get booze in and food in and soft drinks and everything like that. So that covers that. And also there's a £10 deposit for the curry the night before. That'll come off the bill at the end of your curry. It's not kind of you having to pay to get in or anything like that. It's just kind of hold the seat. So the people who own the curry house aren't kind of pocket or anything like that. If you want to head over to thebritishtownnetwork.com, big banner on the front page there, order your tickets there, and you can go in and there's a little, nice little interface that allows you to add however many bash tickets and however many curry tickets you want. It's an amazing day. It will be superb. If we get the weather like we did last year, it will be incredible. But we'll wait and see because it is Britain after all. But yeah, so that'll be good. Second thing I just want to mention is Patreon. We have a Patreon fund for the network, patreon.com/British Tech Network. If you just want to chuck us a dollar a month or something like that just to support the shows, we very much appreciate it. That's roughly about 60 pence. A dollar is about 60 pence. Really, really appreciate it. If you kind of listen to a couple of shows and you feel like it's giving you 60 pence worth of value a month, please chuck us some cash there. It all goes into, we don't take any salaries or anything like that. The show, it's just basically to cover the cost of equipment, stuff like that. Really, really appreciate it. And finally, I'm just going to quickly go around everybody and just find out where people can find your awesome work. So I will start with Alan. Where can people find you if they want to hear more of your awesomeness?
They can find me on Twitter at digitalamoeba.com.
On Twitter, digitalamoeba.com.
Yeah. Digital Amoeba.
Cool. Okay. And I'm assuming digitalamoeba.com as well.
Yeah, that'll direct them through to me eventually.
Cool. Doc, where can they find you, sir?
On the unofficial Apple web blog at tuaw.com. I am on pretty much almost every social media as at Doc Rock, DocRock. And my podcast is on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, one on Google Plus and one directly on TUAW. And that's the Ask Tua Show with Kelly and then the Tua TV Live with Steve Sandy.
Very cool. Cool. Great. And Eric, where can people find you?
We've got a daily app show called Android App Addicts that's on the Podnuts Network. It's podnuts.com/AAA. And if they want to reach me, I can be reached on Google Plus or eric@podnuts.com.
Great.
And finally, Podnuts is with a PODNUTZ.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, cool. And Kelly, finally, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso. As Doc said, you can find me on Tuesday afternoons doing Ask Tua with him. I also host the Tua Talkcast, and you can find me elsewhere on the British Tech Network, depending on the day.
Yes, indeed. Have you managed a full house yet? Have you managed to be on every show yet?
I think maybe so.
Oh, no, you've never been on the Gamer Show. Sorry.
I haven't been on the Gamer Show.
But you've been on every other show. It's okay. We can have so. It's a big kind of VIP list in the Gamer Show.
But I'm sure it is.
I don't think anybody has ever been to the Gamer Show apart from the three of us that host it. Nobody would want to, frankly.
Well, you gotta ask. Then you'll find out.
Cool. Okay. And I am at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. I almost forgot what I was going to say there. I'm Paul Wheatley on Twitter. You can find me on this show every fortnight and on the Gamer Show alternate Monday night. Also on the Help Show, which is every other week. Won't be this week. Normally we'd be Wednesday night this week, where we just kind of do phone and help for any type of tip. My teeth, it's getting late. Any type of tech product you want to kind of ask us questions or anything like that, we normally do it on Wednesday night. We're not doing it this week, we're just skipping a week. And you can sometimes find me on the Big Show and the Mac Show on the network as well. It's been amazing using your ears this evening. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much to my amazing panel for spending the last kind of couple hours, especially to American brothers who were giving up a part of their holiday today to sit and listen to me talk, or more accurately, Kelly talk. Thank you very much, everybody, and good night.